Welcome to iConversations. I'm Laura Fantacci, co-founder of Wardrobe Icons, and today I'm joined by our features editor, Brooke Lepore-Trench, to talk to tablescape and event maestro, Fiona Leahy. I was an Instagram follower and admirer for the longest time, and fortunately, we're now friends. She is the creative force behind the world's most immersive and glamorous events, and one of the funniest and most joyful people I know. So for the readers that don't know who Fiona Leahy is, I feel like we need to do a bit of an introduction. Because I've had a bit of a crush on you. Oh. I first found out about you on Instagram. And it was a beautiful dinner. And I just stumbled on this beautiful picture of a table, like a tabletop. And it had this amazing floral print tablecloth with like a matching table, the napkin, and then on top of that there was a matching cracker and there was a bow, and it was all these things that kind of spoke to me. I was like, my God, who is the mastermind behind this beautiful picture? And I sort of tapped on it and it was Fiona Leahy, follow. And that's where my obsession with you started. So Fiona Leahy is a creative event. How would you describe yourself, actually? Let's start with that.
I describe myself to myself as a creative barber job. And then, but really, you know, officially, if I was to have a business card, I guess it would be creative event designer.
And yeah, that's, I think it's very fitting today because we're talking about
creativity.
Creativity. Yeah. And when we were thinking about the perfect person to talk about it, of course, it was you.
Oh.
The first question I want to ask you today is, where do you think creativity sort of, where does it all begin? Because I've read a lot of things that would say that sometimes creativity can spark out of boredom. Or some other people find that it comes when they're like working under pressure, and that's when that little sort of light goes off. How does it work for you?
It can work in different ways. For sure, I believe it does come from boredom sometimes, but that's a huge luxury nowadays. I can't remember the last time I was properly bored. But for me, it's creativity comes from a form of creative pressure. Because I have deadlines, because I have to perform in a way, it's not just like I'm sitting in a cottage waiting for inspiration. I can't really live like that. I have to, you know, if I have to do a creative pitch or a proposal, it sometimes has to be turned around in a week. You have to turn around things for meetings. So you kind of need it to be, not like dial it in, but you kind of do need to. So I find my creativity is really sparked by other people, a lot from my team, actually, I have to say. I love collaboration, and I actually find it easier to design with others than alone a lot of the time.
So do you, how does it all start? Like a client comes to you and says, I want to throw a party, a dinner party, a wedding. Do they show you something that kicks it, you know, that starts it all off?
I've been doing this 13 years, and I've really learned that you have to have a true connection with somebody to really have it be a fulfilling process. It's all a process. So we meet and we hopefully have got, you know, mutual respect and creativity. I mean, not everybody needs to have the same creativity, obviously, that's why I'm being hired, but you know, kind of the like the gist of each other and our ideas.
Do they show you, like, will they show you like an image? They'll tell you what the theme is and then you kind of take it from there? Because that's kind of how I've been working with you. I've worked with you a couple of times now. That's, I mean, the first time I came to you and I think I had this like idea and I kind of sort of pre-prepared it. And then the second time I was like, there's just this thought, do what you want with it.
Yeah.
You know, do you like being entrusted with that and just turning it into something amazing?
I really do like to collaborate. I think that's when it's really magical. I think when you're really capturing somebody's essence, if you're doing a party for somebody, that's what you're essentially trying to do. If it's a brand or a person, you're capturing and projecting their essence in a really beautiful way. So I think it's collaborative mainly. That's the way I love to work. In fact, when people come to me and say, I have no ideas, I have no Pinterest, I have no visuals, this is the budget, do whatever you want, I find that quite difficult. You know what I think is really interesting? When I think about creativity and the process, I definitely look back to my childhood, and I am so grateful that I grew up in a very quiet, kind of boring place. And genuinely, when I think of boredom and creativity in the early years, I think they're really symbiotic. I think if you're overstimulated and you've got a lot of distractions, there's no room for that flow.
And so what was your childhood like? Were you like making things in the garden?
Yeah, we had a really big garden. It was, I wouldn't even call it a garden, it was more like a field. And it was, you know, it was pretty humble, but we just kind of made things and did things. My mother worked, my father worked, and we were, you know, we'd build tree houses, we had donkeys. I would read ferociously, like literally nearly a book a day in the summer holidays. And then my uncle came from Hawaii once and brought us the Copacabana, and we watched that movie every day for probably a month, no joke. But it was kind of boring. There wasn't much to do.
And what were your favorite games?
Hide and seek.
What did you draw? Like, were you?
I drew a lot, actually. When I was growing up, I wanted to be a fashion designer, and we had a thing called a fashion wheel. I don't know if there was that in England, but basically, you would have this wheel of like shoes and skirt and top. I used to draw.
Oh yes, I had that when I was little. Yeah. And you could turn it around, and you could make different outfits: the top and the skirt, and then you could add like maybe a polka dot.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
I had that.
Yeah. So that was, and we used to color. There was a lot of art classes. I would then have art classes with my, I'm the oldest, so I would have classes with my brothers and sisters. We would do things like my parents would go out and I would set up a fake fish and chip shop in our living room.
Would you merchandise it?
Like, oh, absolutely.
What was your fish and chip shop like?
Well, did it have like... The most important thing is that my dad at that point had a stationery business, and I remember cutting up all of his brown envelopes to make chip bags.
So you were already into the details.
I was in so much trouble, but I loved it. And we would serve them out the window pretending it was kind of like, you know,
that's
the hatch.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And then what happened next? Because then this is when you were still a little girl, but when did it become more of a passion? Like, did friends like ask you to wrap their presents? Like, when did it become, I'm into this?
Well, then my parents renovated a house and turned it into a hotel. So basically, you know, my kitchen was a restaurant, and we were always hosting, and people who stayed were paying guests. And so I would work and set tables and lay tables and make desserts to earn pocket money. And I literally lived in hospitality. That was my life.
It started really early.
Yeah. It's in my DNA.
It is.
And my grandmother had a bed and breakfast as well. So honestly, I think that hospitality creative gene is just like, it's there.
And did you want to put your own stamp on it? Like, would you say, Mom, I don't want that linen tablecloth?
Oh yeah, I remember getting really excited. My dad was opening Pepper Steakhouse, and I was like getting very excited about the knife selection.
What do you think is what's your handwriting when it comes to creativity? Because I can tell, and I can spot a fake as well.
Mm, you mean a Fiona Leahy event?
I can spot
it. Or a copycat.
Yeah. Or a copycat.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a handwriting. There is something. There's always something quite feminine about what you do. But no one event is the same as the next. That's what I think I'm blown away by. Because where is that pool of like never-ending creativity coming from? Like, how do you do it?
Well, you know, I think, say for example, our event last night, a lot of it was inspired by Omega and the constellations, right? But it's different for every single event. You know, for Dior recently, that was like Toile de Joie, but it was their Toile de Joie. So it's kind of taking something that comes from the client and then ruminating and thinking about it and then going, okay, that's what we should do. And hopefully they like the idea as well.
And you work with some amazing people. And your first job, I mean, every time I read an interview about you, it always quotes the wedding.
Yeah.
The Dieter wedding.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have to ask a question about that.
Yeah.
Where did you meet? How did it come about?
Well, you know, when you look, I look back on my path, as they say, I was assistant creative director at Garrard. And I guess I was just kind of a bit of a creative OCD, I call it now, but like a creative megalomaniac. I wanted to do absolutely everything. And I got involved in the events because I was like, ooh, that's fun. Let me do that as well. And hired Dieter to do her first ever European performance. And we really just got on. We have such a shared love of nostalgia and beauty and random things like even raving and electronic music, and just she's very funny and I like funny people, so we really got on. And long story short, we were on holidays together, and she was like, I'm getting married in Ireland, and we discussed, you know, ideas for her wedding, never thinking I would be doing it because I'd never done an event. And I was like, oh yeah, let's do Victorian, or you should do Victorian, really romantic, really beautiful, stay away from more Gothic. Anyway, when I got back, she was from holidays, she was like, why don't you do my wedding? And I was like, oh my God, I could never do that. Can you imagine? But I took it on kind of as a, and I think that's the funny thing about life, right? When on reflection, it's, you have to be brave and you have to take things, you have to go for it sometimes, even when you think you're not really, I didn't think I was worthy. And in fact, sometimes even still, you know, you hear of people having like that imposter syndrome. It's still, you know, I still really? Can, I can totally still have imposter syndrome. Although you would hope after 13 years, it would be a bit like lessened. But sometimes I'm a bit like, oh my gosh, how am I even doing this? But so I had very valid imposter syndrome for my first one, for my first event, but I actually loved it, and I loved that spirit of collaboration. I loved working with Manson, had amazing ideas and an amazing aesthetic sense. So did Deja. It was in Ireland, where I'm from. It was in Tipperary, and I loved making lots of Irish, like we used Waterford crystal, and we had Irish lace, and we made everything as authentic as possible, which is another thing I really like to do, you know, make things as authentic as they could or should be.
So we were talking about the events that I've been part of at Wardrobe Icons, and just the kind of the exhilaration and the sense of crisis and the feeling and the pressure in approaching an event. And at that moment, like, not quite knowing if it's going to work, and when do you let go and just let the energy take over. So how do you deal with that? You have this constantly, you're in this cycle of, is that true, of like, this sort of, I'm making a circle with my pen, but it's like this wheel.
Yeah.
What is that like, living in that? And how is that, how do you cope with that?
It's a really valid question. And actually, I remember one of my team coming in, and there's like a Forbes list. It's a real list. You can Google it. A Forbes list of the most stressful jobs in the universe. And there's like fighter pilot. And I think third down is event.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
No, seriously. And I was like, show me that report. And I was like, oh, actually, it's slightly like throwing yourself off a cliff sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I do feel sometimes like I'm a performing seal. I have to perform, or I have to get everything right for the client. And, you know, it needs to be right creatively and budget wise. And then the people who are guests need to enjoy it and love it. And I think you need a certain disposition for sure. There are people that are suited to doing it. I love adrenaline, and I love a challenge, and I love proving that I can do something. And I think that those people that have those qualities are drawn to event work for sure. Like if you really need, if you want a more placid, easy life and you have nothing to prove, you don't need to work events. No.
And actually, on that note, I have a question, because that pressure that you get of getting everything right, how do you deal with mistakes? How do you deal with the things that didn't go, not only according to, you know, say the client who's not happy with something, but also if you're looking around and the perfectionist in you is saying, oh God, I wish I'd done that different. Because I know that for me, it's taken a long time to accept any form of mistake as just as a learning curve. Mm. And the reason why I say it's taken me a long time is that having children, you want to lead by example, and you want them not to have a meltdown every time, you know, they do something wrong. They want you to see, you want them to see that you're being resilient and that you're just moving on and learning from your mistakes. Do these mistakes like maybe haunt you? How do you process them?
I look at my mistakes, on the rare occasion that there might be one, as a learning curve. I really think you have to learn from them. It sounds so cheesy, but you know, when you're doing something that's live, it's live. There are so many elements. There's like, there's weather, there's temperament, there's deliveries, there's so many things. I mean, just recently I was doing an event and there was the climate change protests, which I totally agreed with, but I was doing an event in central London, and by 7 p.m., guest arrival is at 7:30. I had no tablecloth or seat pads, and there was nothing I could do because the deliveries couldn't actually get to me. And I actually did kind of, I was like, am I being punked? Like, I actually felt like I've got no control over this and people are now coming to take pictures. And you just have to, you know, I often think that it's like being a swan. You're kind of like, really have to appear regal and everything's kind of beautiful and everything's under control, and then furiously paddling underneath. And that was not really a mistake, but you know, I could flip out, I could lose it, you know, I probably did, you know, quietly, but it's just life, right? And when the sooner you realize that life is not perfection and it doesn't go as scripted, you realize that a dinner might not go as expected. And but, yeah,
I suppose for me it's just taken quite a lot of, I have to really think about that and I have to remind myself it doesn't come naturally, because as a perfectionist I want everything to be just right, and when it's not, I just get a little bit annoyed. But what I've learned to do now is process it like this. After something, after an event, after any kind of job that I've done, I'll sit down and I'll think about three good things, mm-hmm. and three, not, I don't call them mistakes, I called things that I could improve or do differently. And that helps me to not see that failure, mistake, or like slight imperfection as a bad thing, but as a way of something new and doing it better next time.
Yeah, I mean, a debrief, you know, is a really good thing, and I used to shy away from them, but I think also it's just being nicer to ourselves, right? Like, I used to be very harsh on myself if things were not exactly perfect. You know, I think if you're doing this sort of job, you obviously, one has a perfectionist streak, but it's also important to enjoy it and enjoy the challenges and enjoy what comes your way. So yeah, I try not to give myself too hard a time.
And when you've come to a point where like you need a holiday, how do you unwind? Like, how do you avoid a burnout? Do you take a holiday? Do you just need a break from it all? What do you
do? Are there any crystals? I think there's some crystals in here.
There's definitely crystals. I did burn out once. I had done my biggest ever event at that time. It was a huge overseas event. And I at the end of it, I was really burnt out because it was very public and it was just, there was a lot. And I was quite, you know, I'd been doing it for a few years, but I did burn out. I went to the Mayo Clinic and the doctor was like, in his German accent, was like, a burnout. And I was like, great.
And how did it manifest? When you say a burnout, like, how did it manifest?
I was just really tired. I think what's really interesting is when you do these blood tests, which I did, where you actually physically see the manifestation of stress on your blood cells, that when you have stress, it's kind of serrated around the edges. And that's when I was like, you can actually physically see how stress manifests in your body.
You could feel it in you, and that's why you went.
Yeah, I felt really tired, really like no love of life whatsoever. It was just really interesting to know that, you know, you think it's in your head, but it actually, of course, there is no real distinction between mind and body. It's the same thing. And so if you are stressed, of course, it's going to manifest in your body. And of course, it's a physical sensation. So I really, probably to a flaw, I'm so into my well-being. Like, I have a well-being regime, which I think, it left to my own devices, could be a full-time job. You know,
what do you do? Exercise? You eat well?
I meditate every day. I go to sound baths. I love infrared saunas. In fact, I'm getting one here at home. I walk my dogs. I have massages regularly. You know, all of that sort of good stuff, which I think really, I think it's important to counterbalance that what I do actually is stressful.
I know we were talking about this a couple of days ago, about whether you can teach someone to be creative, or is it something that you just have within you? And I know we disagree on this one, because I think that you're either creative or you're not, and you can kind of learn the gists of it, but it's something that's so deeply rooted like in your DNA that you just wouldn't be able to come up with the ideas. I don't think anyone could come up with the ideas. You think you can train people to do what you do, to, you know, to think about the way you put patterns together or color schemes, but the ideas that come from your brain, I don't think you could teach them.
I believe that you can facilitate creativity. You can encourage it. And I think that a lot of people don't have that opportunity because you're told you're good or bad, or, you know, it's creativity that also becomes like that thing of art and commerce that you actually make a living from. I think it probably needs to be in your DNA to make it something that actually is viable and that works. Having ideas and being creative, and that's great. I think everybody has got some aspect of creativity in them, but it's just whether or not you can actually do much with it.
I think it needs to be nurtured. So, yeah. I mean, I have two little girls and I can see the difference between the two of them. One of them, I would say, is creative, and she's always drawing and she's always making things, and I can just see that if I nurture that, it could become something. Mm. I don't know in which field yet, but I think it could become something. The other one is just not interested in drawing. She's not interested. She's more of an outdoorsy, more. So I think it is that little gene. I think I got it from my mother. She was a designer, and my grandmother also was very creative. And I think that it's something that you inherit. So
yeah.
Who was creative in your life?
Oh, my mother was super. Actually, my father was creative as well. He studied originally to be a chef and then did hotel management. And my mother was a hairdresser. She's now running a bed and breakfast, but she's very creative. But then, you know, creativity, for example, I think my accountant is super creative. He's creative with numbers, and that's another form of creativity. You know, if you think creatively, it just means to me that you're not rigid in your thinking.
That okay.
There's a,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that I can see that.
But I think it's something that's really important, especially when I look at kids. Oh, when I look at the kids of today, you know. But, you know, I think it really is important. I see this with my sister's kids, and I'm really like, oh, my God, please take away the devices. Like, please allow them to be bored and to have to pick up a book. Or even, you know, with myself recently, I bought colouring pencils and some scrapbooks because I could see myself. I've been too busy doing and not allowing that just, like, negative space. Or not negative, but just like that space for just flow. I lost my phone last week, and what was really amazing was that I was sat in a restaurant waiting for a friend, and I had a pen and my new colouring pencils in my bag, and I was just dawdling all over the menu, and I was so happy, and I was just, you know, I came up with some stuff that I was like, oh my God, if I had my phone, I'd just be on Instagram or messaging or, heaven forbid, on the Daily Mail online, you know. But I was actually just in pure flow, scribbling
and drawing does that to me as well.
Yeah.
I will often find that when I'm coloring in with my daughter, my brain is doing nothing. It feels amazing.
Yeah.
It's just disengaged.
Yeah.
It's just flowing, as you said.
Yeah.
It's really powerful.
At work, I've done tablescapes, and we'll do them in the evening where we do, it's my favorite thing, actually. It's the best part of my work is doing the mock-ups, which sometimes we don't do, but usually we try and do one. So we do a mock-up of how it's going to be. And there's no real, like, I love working in the evening. That's another thing that I really think helps me in my flow. And we'll set it up, and I just go very quiet, and I start moving things around and shifting things and really getting into, it's just a flow. And it's really remarkable how peaceful that feels. It's just like you're in your
element. I've watched you in action, and you're just like that.
Mm.
Because you probably can't see yourself
you're
doing it. But I can tell you that I've watched you, and I've noticed that you're really within, like, you're in a place where you can't be disturbed when you're setting a table, when you're preparing a room.
Yeah.
I can see that you're figuring everything out and going with the flow as well, which I really like. So you might have done the prototypes, but you're very happy to also rethink things. I think you're very accommodating. And sometimes creative people with their own ideas can be quite cagey and they don't want to change anything. I've never felt that with you. You've always tried to find, you're a very yes person. Do you think that of you?
Well, I think also doing what I do, you're in service, you're pleasing people, right? So you kind of, I think it's important to be a yes person. Not too much.
Yes, but it's not easy, and it's not intrinsic. I mean, I think that you're, I mean, I'm not a yes person. Like, I just find it quite hard to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
So I'm in total admiration of someone that is not only, you know, that is trying to always please the other.
Oh, but I have a line.
I know you do. I think we might have even seen no names.
No names.
I might have seen that line.
Certain things won't go on the table, you know. So I do, but you know, I think part of what I do is, and I'm really interested in why we do what we do, and I think mine is to be validated, and I like to please, and I think that's why we all have our reasons for doing our careers, and I think there's so much more to it than just like, oh, I really fancied, you know, doing what I do. It's actually more intrinsically linked to our whole psychological makeup, and I think anybody working in events is to wants to please.
And do you need that at the end of every event? Do you if you finish something and you haven't had that but praise, how does that go down?
I kind of just try to be I like it. Of course, it's amazing when somebody goes, oh, I love it, it's incredible. But, you know, it doesn't always happen that way. And sometimes people don't even think that you might need to hear that. And so I kind of am a bit like a camel. I have a good bit of self-belief and and I just go on those reserves, you know. So it's nice. It's really nice to hear positive feedback, but it's not essential.
I have heard, a little bird has told me, that there is a Fiona Leahy range coming out, a website, which will become my obsession. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I've always wanted a shop ever since there was a shed in our garden that my dad used to store stationery in. He had a stationery supply. He used to supply offices with stationery, and I made it into my own shop. And then I love buying and selling, and I get such a pleasure when people contact the studio and go, I love those candlesticks, where are they from? And so there's a real, like, we're replying to a need in a way. And so a lot of people do reach out and would love to buy things, and we sell a lot of things, but I really want to make it like a platform of curated things that I find, some things that I make, but a lot of things that I find and love and use, so that you can create the same at home.
And so what will it be? Will it be plates and glassware?
It will be all the things you need.
All the things you need a great tablescape.
For a great life. I mean, eventually a great life. I kind of want to add things in, like the perfect crystal deck. And, I think it's that elevating the mundane. I really love that little essence that you can, or even, you know, from the School of Life, conversation cards, which I think are incredible at a dinner party, that you can actually have cues for conversation. It'll be whatever I think will add a little bit of magic to your life.
Are there any tips, like anything that we can leave our listeners with that will help them this evening to maybe tickle their creativity and do something? Maybe it could be like a table setting. Like, what tips can you give, like practical things that we can take away with us?
I think, just based on my own experience, if you allow yourself the time and the tools to play, like I kind of consider it playing when I'm doing a tablescape, or when I'm setting one up, it's not for real life. And that's when you can kind of feel, ooh, that works, that's nice, that looks pretty together, that's easier than I thought. And just allow yourself that opportunity and the things that will facilitate it. For me, it's, you know, a bag of markers now and a sketch pad. You could just have a tablecloth and some flowers, you know, that you've got from your garden, picked from your garden. I think keep it simple and keep it authentic. And also the main thing I would say is try and do it for yourself and not to impress. I think when you keep it creativity authentic and real, that's when it really shines. Like, that's when it really works. That's what I've seen in my life anyway.
We couldn't end on a better note.
So,
thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to iConversations. Turns out, talking never goes out of fashion. You can find more episodes of these insightful conversations with the women who inspire us on Apple Podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps get the word out.